tell stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca.
Oh, g'day, Macca. This is Ross. I'm actually in Claremont at the moment. I just wanted to give you a call to tell you how good the beautiful highlands of Queensland are looking. I've driven a lot, but it's just so spectacular at the moment. We've got a beautiful, soaking wet season up here. It's still raining, actually. But,
what do you do, Ross?
I've got a little business up in Townsville. I actually weigh caravans and cars for compliance, all of those grey nomads and stuff. We weigh vehicles, like little mobile scales, you know, people that are travelling. And I took my family around Australia a couple of years ago and just drove for 25,000 Ks. But when you buy all your cars and your vans and all that sort of stuff, you've got to make sure you're all compliant, like the trucking industry does it very well. And as we want to go on adventures, we should be complying to all of the rules as well.
You've got to have a certain weight, have you, with the caravan? And if you exceed what's the story?
Yeah. The caravan's got to weigh a certain amount. It's got a little compliance plate on it. And the car's got lots of compliance areas on it. And then you hook them up to each other and they've got more compliance areas. It's a little bit confusing, to be honest. But, it's just to help people out and keep them safe on the roads. You know, the drive I just did from Roma up, you know, the road gets a little bit wobbly. And if your weights are out and you're not set up properly, it can become pretty dangerous pretty quickly. So you want to go on an adventure of a lifetime. You want to be safe. Well, that's what I do for a living. But, I just wanted to tell you how beautiful it was, the countryside up here at the moment. If you are sitting down in Melbourne and Sydney and it is getting cold, I'd be hooking that van up or your camper or whatever you're in and come and see it, because it's just unbelievable at the moment.
You ain't got a cracker. They tell stories so grand of this vast, timeless land, and they call it Sunday with Macca. They all call it Sunday with Macca. Yeah, they all call it Sunday with Macca. Get on with it, Macca.
I will. There's a hint for you. Get on the road. And people usually do that. They used to say to me, oh, look, after Anzac Day, which is coming up, that's when we hook up and take off. And if you're getting cold in Sydney and Melbourne and all other parts and Tassie, hook it up and get on the road. That was Ross. Good morning and welcome. 1300 700 222, maccatracks@gmail.com. Speaking of which, Jen in Hobart said, this came in last week, so she says, dry, dry, dry in Hobart. Fingers crossed for some rain today. I don't know how much they've had since then, but that's usually the story around the place, and others have had heaps and heaps and heaps of rain. Macca, 3,000 wind turbine. I had so many letters about wind turbines and renewables. Ian says 3,000 wind turbines for Tasmania proposed by both sides of politics, that's Labor and Liberal, and they wonder why we are voting for independents and minor parties who oppose these bird-killing abominations. They are proposing a giant wind farm for Robbins Island, the most important migratory shorebirds habitat in southern Australia. Coastal wind is the habitat of seabirds, not wind turbines, says Ian. Thank you, Ian. And from Daryl Cook, the R&S series Valiants were and still are an Australian icon. We had a Valiant. This year, the Nationals will be held here in WA Saturday, October the 12th to October the 19th. And owners of these classics will be travelling from far and wide, from all over Australia to Perth to show their vehicles and participate in the many events and get-togethers. We would love to invite one and all to join us and put the word out to any and all of you R&S series Valiant owners that they will all be welcome. The president of the club is Mike Barker, who recently attended Chrysler's on the Murray, which is a fabulous week of showing everything Chrysler off. There you go. October the 12th. The Nationals for the Chryslers, the Valiants, R&S's. Thank you again, says Daryl Cook, and all the very best from us over here in WA. It's always show season sometime in Australia. I went to the Sydney Royal last week before, and I met Mari and Tony Knight. And I met them before in Coonabarabran because we did that dance in Coonabarabran. Come and meet Marie and Tony Knight, and they just sold their wool because they had the wool sales. So exciting. The great thing about coming to the Royal Easter Show is that I don't have to go all over. People from all over come and I bump into them. Marie and Tony Knight from Coonabarabran. How are you, Tony?
Hey, very well, thanks.
Marie?
I'm really well, thank you.
That's good. Have you had a good show?
Well, we sold our wool.
So that's always good.
Yeah, we might just leave it at that.
Well, the bloke who sells it or buys it said that's your 37th clip.
Don McDonald, I've been selling wool with him for 37 years. The very first sale that he had in 1988, I had 10 bales of wool in that sale, and it turned out to be the first line that was sold. And it made 1,435 cents per kilogram. And what we sold today, the best price was 1,310.
37 years later.
Yeah. The wool industry doesn't do inflation well.
Last time I talked about wool out here, a couple of years ago, wool was on a high.
That is the problem with the wool industry. It goes up and down all the time. And that's why they tried to have the reserve price scheme in the 1970s. And that seemed to work okay, but then it collapsed. Yeah, the industry was in a mess. I can remember my father saying that in 1920, his dad was very excited. He got 20 pence per pound for his wool. And yeah, there was much excitement. By 1930, it was down to 8 pence per pound.
And there was the Korean wool boom, and it was a pound, and
yeah, for sure. It's been going up and down like that all the time. And it's, as you can imagine, it's very tough on us when it's right down.
Well, that's why Australian farmers are so resilient, Tony, because you go through the good and the bad, and then the good, and then the bad, and then the good, and then the bad, and you get used to it, eh?
Well, yes. What you've got to try and do is put a bit away in the good times to make up for the bad times. Trouble is, we need to put a lot away in the good times. Anyway.
Marie, how's things in Kinabaran?
Pretty good. We're still doing lamb jumpers. We've done over 500,000 of those and still going strong. It gets stronger every year. We've got a wonderful community. We look after ourselves. But we would really love another dance, because we're still talking about the last one, and we're all...
So are we.
We're all practising our barn dance so we can do it a bit better.
Oh, get it
this
right,
time.
Please. They all went... Some went out the door and some went into the dining room, and it was just...
It was a
shamozzle.
It was a scream. But
everybody enjoyed themselves.
That's the main thing.
Even the band enjoyed themselves.
Yeah. We'll come back. We'll come back later in the year, I think.
It was such a horrific year, and people are still talking about not the bad times, but the good times and the things other people did for us. And the dance was certainly a really big lifting of the spirits, which I think was what we were after. So
the Sydney Royal and all the shows in the capital cities, it's when they say when the country comes to the city. You like coming to the city for a day or three or four?
Yeah, we certainly do.
Watching the excitement of people looking at the rams being judged, and they are beautiful. I'm having a ball watching them. I'd like to take half of them home. But it's to see the kids.
What, the people or the rams?
The rams. I want to take some of those rams home. They're beautiful. I've got some beautiful pets that they'd have a ball with.
What sort of wool do you grow?
Medium, a finer side of medium, 18 microns. If we have a good year, it'll buy it to 19 micron. If we have a bad year, which last year was a very ordinary year for us, but the wool turned out to be fine and very clean. Yeah, it yields well and it sells well on the day.
Most of ours is for the good suits. So Armani, Hugo Boss and Savoy Row.
And Prince William.
Yeah.
We made the suit for him too. My family's been on our land since about the 1865, I think it was. My great-grandfather took up country at home. And, we've just been there ever since. We don't know anything else.
We'll see you in Coonabarabran later in the year for a dance.
That'd be wonderful.
And a dinner dance, we'll call it, eh?
Okay.
Yep. Wonderful.
Lovely to talk to you, Marie. And, Tony, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Maka.
Good morning, Ian. It's Kevin here. Greetings from Mount Isa.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I just thought I'd twig my memory when you were talking about the sea mullet running many, many years ago. I'm going up nearly 50 years ago because the kids were only young. I'll be 40 years ago. We used to go to Finglehead on the Port Stephens there when the mullet ran over Easter. And, of course, the fishermen would bring them in and they'd just pack them into their utes and away they'd go. And, of course, some of them would still be floundering around. They'd fall off the back. Mm-hmm. Kids used to run after them and pick them up.
Yeah.
We used to bury them in the sand and then come back later, get them, take them home. I'll take them back to the caravan park, skin them, scale them, and then take the lining out of the tummy, pack it full of oysters, a little bit of lemon, 7 minutes, three to four minutes each side on the barbecue, packed in foil. Beautiful.
Yeah, the big sea mullet. But they used to catch them for the roe. That was the thing.
That was the
reason they were after them, apparently, because the mullet, they've always had a poor relation to all the wonderful fish like snapper and King George Whiting and all that sort of stuff. People turn their nose up.
Apparently,
at the mullet,
they say they were a little bit bitter to eat as such, but by taking the lining of the tummy out, it was like a black lining, it really sweetened them up.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But yeah, this is traditionally Anzac Day around this time, as I said, when the blood would make their start blooming, the mullet make their run. And it's a wonderful, well, anything you see, like you see the wildebeest in Africa, any natural phenomenon is just, it's awe-inspiring. And it's, you know, it's like the what's the name the other day, the lunar eclipse, or the solar eclipse, actually.
Solar eclipse, yeah.
And people follow it all around the world, and they do all sorts of strange things at the time. They go all around, because these happen at various times, and I think they're called umbrophiles. I don't know what people who follow the mullet, they're called fishermen, I think, but
true.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing to see. I've seen a boat with that, and as you say, the trail is just overloaded with fish.
And they sit for hours, the fishermen, just waiting for them to run. And when they do run in schools, it's just amazing. It's like a big black blob in the ocean, you know.
Oh, it is. It's as I said, it's like seeing a tremendous thunderstorm, and the cloud and the sky goes green and just horrible, or a twister or a willy-willy, any thing of nature like that when it masses, you know. It's wonderful to see, Kev.
Yeah, I can remember you're talking about Halley's Comet. I can remember back in the when it came out, we used to go up. We lived in Sydney at the time, and we live on the Gold Coast now, but lived in Sydney at the time, and we used to go up the Putty Road up through Spencer, I think it was called, and we'd sit there in the dark of the night. We'd camp for the weekend, and we'd just wait for it to come over, and it was, you know, I've had the binoculars and everything, you know, it's just a wonderful sight to see. I think it's, 77 years it comes around, so we were able to say that we did see that.
76.
My grandmother actually saw it twice. That was in her life.
Yeah, 76 years, I think it's 76. I saw the play, David Williamson's play, which was about was about Halley, but it was also about Sir Isaac Newton. And I went and saw it, maybe it was last year or the year before. It's not one of David's famous plays, but I loved it. It's about those really bright people.
Yeah.
Newton and Halley.
He was a wonderful playwright, David.
Yeah, and there was lots of other people involved in the scenario, but one of them was a, you know, like with anybody in any sort of field of endeavour, whether it's cricket or whatever, people want to do you in, and there were people around that time. But I just wanted to understand how come Halley, who only had, you know, a life of, I don't know, 80 years or whatever he lived, but how he knew, this is going to come back. This will be back every 76 years. And Newton, such brains those people had, and I don't know, it's beyond our
especially
realm.
Especially with limited resources that they had at the time. You know, everything was sort of, in a way, trial and error, I suppose, to a certain degree, if you look back on it, what we have today to play with. But another interesting thing you're talking about, we're on the road at the moment. Actually, I'm ringing you from Mount Isa. We came up through Winton the other day. We left the Gold Coast about 11 days ago and come up through Miles and up to Billawela, then across to Sapphire, and then Longreach, and then came up through Winton. And I've never seen so much grass around. It's just absolutely beautiful at the moment. The wet weather has created so much feed for cattle. They're all knee-deep in grass, and all up through Winton on the way to Cloncurry there. It's just amazing.
Well, I just read that little email I had there from Sandy. They're baling. That's how good it is. They're baling the Mitchell grass, which is the native grass. But
And even around Mount Isa here, you know, like all the hills are green, beautiful green, and it's just very, very pleasant at the moment, sitting underneath a tree in the caravan park.
All right, enough of that, we don't want to know about that, Kevin.
Hopefully we'll get up to, we're going off to Barclay and then across the three ways up to Catherine and then over to the west, so we'll be gone for about 4 months, hard life.
Oh, well, anything you see that's of interest, give us a ring, Kev, all right?
We certainly will, mate. Lovely to chat.
Good on you.
Oh, good morning, Macca. It's John calling. You may recall last year we called you from Norseman in South Australia when we were heading over to the Surf Life Saving National Titles in Perth. This year we're heading up to the Surf Life Saving Titles at Alexandra Headlands, and we're currently on the motorway about 40 k's out of Port Macquarie. So good morning to you.
Yeah, are you towing a boat or something, are you? Or?
Yes, we've actually got two vehicles towing four boats, and we're heading through today up to Alexandra Headlands for the commencement of the Surf Life Saving titles. The youth titles are on today, and then the Masters will go on, and then the Opens will be on starting Wednesday.
Now, tell me, you're from where, John?
We're from Palm Beach, New South Wales.
Right, and you're in Port Macquarie now?
We're passing, just about to come on to Port Macquarie, and we'll continue on through up to Alexandra Headlands today and arrive tonight up on the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's you get around, John. You get around.
We do. It was a long trip last year to Perth and back. This one's an easy day drive. So 4 days to get to Perth last year and a day up and a day back to Alexandra Headlands. So a beautiful day here at the moment on the road. We're travelling well. Left Sydney this morning at 5 a.m. So we're making reasonably good time.
Yeah, so you've got the teams from Palm Beach, where you're from, going up there to Alexandra Headlands to compete in the... And what is it? Is this the national titles or what?
This is the national titles, and we're involved in the surf boat section. So we've got 17 crews that will be representing Palm Beach, New South Wales.
Wow. So this is the national surf life-saving titles of all sorts. Swimming and running and surf boat riding and surf skis and all everything.
Correct. Yarn Man.
March Past. Do they still have the March Past?
They certainly do, yes. March Past is a section there that people are very devoted to, and they take it very, very seriously.
And when do they start? John, later this week?
Yeah, we'll be starting on Wednesday. The surf boat section will be starting Wednesday. And that'll carry through until Sunday, and then it concludes on Sunday after.
And the whole thing concludes Sunday, so it's Wednesday to Sunday, is it?
Correct, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, gee, I'd love to be there. I'd love to go there to that. There's always people. Well, and everywhere, every state's competing in this.
They are, yes. Every state in Australia competes. And, it's one of Australia's largest sporting events, so... It's a culmination of a lot of hard training for the crews from every club vying to be the national champion. So we're in there with a pretty good chance.
Well, earlier this year we talked to the bloke from Perth. Kel, where were they from? Safety Bay or somewhere in Perth, and they were driving across the Nullarbor, and a truckie saw them, and they were going to the under 23s or the under 19. Surf rowers, I think, in Lawn, down near Lawn. Anyway, yeah,
yes.
And then, so I suppose some will be coming across the Nullarbor and across the paddock and towing their boats, will they? I suppose it's the only way they get there.
They will be, and there'll be boats coming from, Victoria.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
How exciting. Yeah. How exciting.
Yeah.
Well, can we go up there to Alexandra Headlands on the weekend and do the program up there? What are
you
we doing?
Certainly
could. Why don't we? I'll have to talk to Peter Scott. I wonder if we could. I'd love to go there because there'll be lots of people.
Yes, it'll be an interesting time. So if you see us on the beach, we've got a green tent with a cabbage tree palm on it.
All right.
And we will make you most welcome. So that'll be in the boat section.
Uh-huh.
And we will... absolutely show you a good time. We might take you out in the boat as well.
Oh, well, yeah. let's calm down now. Let's calm down there, John. all right. We might see you next weekend with a bit of luck.
Macca, we'll look forward to seeing you, mate, and thank you very much for your time, and have a great day.
Yeah, and to all the people who are involved in that, they'll be heading from all over. They're heading to Alexandra Headlands. All right, good on you, mate.
Thank you, mate.
Hey, Ian, it's Michael. I'm on the banks of the Darling River down near Menindee.
Oh, g'day, Michael. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Yourself?
Yep. How's the Darling looking?
It's good. There's a little bit of flow coming out of it from the block dam. And, yeah, catching a few carp, but one less carp in the world's a good thing, I think, especially in our rivers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what, are you on holidays or what's the story?
No, I'm down here, or as the locals in Broken Hill say, up to Menindi. From Broken Hill, I've been working at the Musicians Club. They're doing a big refit of it, and I've been there since November last year.
And so what's your particular skill, Michael?
I'm a carpenter by trade, but I'm the site manager or foreman on the job. So we've put all new carpet through the club, tiled it, and a few other things, and redo some bathrooms and a refit. And so, yeah. But being the site manager, you're also the carpenter, foreman, labourer, everything. So it's been full on.
And so you swag it by the river every night, or just for the weekend? Or
No, I've got some digs in Broken Hill in Oxide Street. So I worked yesterday morning up till about lunchtime, and then I come down here and did a bit of fishing and just sit around by the river, and I just boiled the kettle then, so I'm going to make myself a cup of tea soon and, yeah, go from there.
Sounds idyllic. I'd say it's a little cool there this morning. Would I be right?
Yeah, you are. I've put the vest on to keep myself warm, but it's not as... There's no wind at the moment. That's what's really cold when you get out to these dry places.
Uh-huh. All right. And, Michael, what's your story? Where are you from originally?
I'm from Lake Macquarie on Rathmines in New South Wales.
Uh-huh.
So this is a bit of a gig to get some petrol money. I'm sort of semi-retired carpenter builder, and I'm doing a bit of travel with the wife and I in the caravan, so this is to get some more petrol money for that.
Well, there you go. That sounds petrol money. And then what are you going to do with the petrol money?
We'll head off in late June, I think, up to see a friend that in the territory, and then make our way across, and then we're going to make our way up to the Cape York in August, early September, and then come back down again, and yeah, just out and about, mate. That's what you got to do, haven't you?
Yeah, and you've got no trouble getting work anywhere if you want.
Oh,
it.
No. Since I had my own business, and then I've closed that up, and then I've done a bit of work on the wheat harvest in Walgett a couple of years ago, and then some work down the Snowy Mountains, just here, there, everywhere. And I think it's a good way to travel. If you do a little bit of work, you meet people, and if you meet the locals, they give you a little bit of knowledge every now and then. Good fishing spots occasionally.
Yeah, have you had a fish on the Darling, have you?
Yeah. Nothing but carp, but that's all right.
Mm.
It's as the T-shirt says, a bad day's fishing's better than a good day's working.
Well, I don't know. It depends what you do, Michael. It depends where your head's at the time, I think. But I get your drift. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not sure. I'd want to be on the banks of the Darling this way, unless I had, a beanie and stuff. And because I can just imagine there'd be a little breeze coming off the Darling.
No, it's quite good this morning. It was it's very still.
Oh, right.
The sun hasn't come up yet, but it's that first light, and you can see the reflections of the trees and the water from the bank on the other side. So, yeah, it's quite pleasant. But a nice hot cup of tea will be good too.
Good on you. There's no lattes. No lattes available there on the banks of the Darling, mate.
No, I'm a tea person, not a coffee person. The odd short black every now and then.
Good on you, Michael. Great to talk to you, mate.
Hey, Ian, I really love your first half hour of the show with your music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a really good mix of all different sorts of stuff. I love that bit.
Yeah, I like it too, actually. And it's a good opportunity to play new songs and songs you may not hear anywhere else. And, yeah, so I enjoy that too.
Exactly right.
All right, mate. Good on you, Mike.
You too. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, mate. See ya.
Bye.
Oh, g'day, Macca. This is Lockie here from Bendigo.
Hi, Lockie.
I'm just carting a load of bees out to Mandurang this morning.
Mandurang? Tell me the story with the bees, mate.
No, I went out and picked them up last night and threw them all on the trailer in the ute, and then I'm taking them out to Mandurang for winter time. They're nice and close to work, and then they'll be going up to the almonds come late winter, early spring.
And they'll be very pleased to see you. So, Lockie, you're not a beekeeper, you just transport them, or what's the story?
No, I'm a beekeeper. I work for another beekeeper during the week, and then in my spare time as a hobby, I do other bees as well.
Uh-huh. And how's business?
Oh, business is busy.
Yeah. Busy as a bee.
Busy as a bee.
Yeah, the and Varroa, you haven't heard of Varroa down there yet, or?
Not yet. There hasn't even been rumours going around, so it'll be here within the next 2 years, I'd say, but, you know, it's all about how we manage it. It's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, and when did you get into bees, Lockie?
I got into bees about 4 years ago. I had been picking avocados, and just applied for a job and got it because I was the only boss licensed.
Uh-huh.
And, been doing it ever since.
Oh, well, and you obviously enjoy it. How's the bees behaving as the season turns?
These ones are a bit cranky, but hopefully we'll get new queens in them come springtime, and that'll make them a bit more docile and friendly.
Yeah, and the winter's coming now, so it's be cool around Bendigo, I'd reckon, this morning.
Yeah, it is quite fresh this morning.
Hmm. So where are you off to?
Mandurang.
Mandurang. And how far's...
Just south of Bendigo.
Just south.
Yeah.
So you'll be there. How many bees you got on board there?
I think between the two vehicles, we took out a ute and trailer and a small drive and a trailer, and there's about 130 hives between us.
Wow.
So, yeah, no fancy lifters or anything. I just picked them up and threw them on the back of the ute.
All right, Lockie, good on you, mate. Well, you've got a busy day then. As I say, busy as a bee.
Yeah, all right, take care.
All right, good on you, mate.
See ya.
See ya. Pete's on the Mornington. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate.
I just thought I'd ring in. I've heard your show a few times over the years, but never actually called.
Uh-huh.
But I'm on the Mornington Peninsula Freeway. I'm heading to a place called Lancefield for a automotive show and swap meet.
Uh-huh.
Just to sort of take a look.
Go on.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No, you're right. Go ahead.
I actually retired 6 weeks ago, so it's just something I've sort of got into over the last sort of month and a half. Just go to the odd car show, go to the odd swap meet, have a look around. See what it's about.
And what happens at a swap? What are they swapping?
Well, but basically it's like a Sunday market, but mainly for car parts.
Uh-huh.
Which is sort of, it's not for, like, if you've got a modern vehicle, it's probably not for you. But if you're looking for, say, a starter motor for a 30-year-old
Range Rover,
tractor, or some sort of 60-year-old car or something like that, that's where you'd go.
Uh-huh. And you meet like-minded people there too, Pete, I suppose.
Yeah, you just sort of wander around, take a look, see what's there. I was at one at Horsham last weekend. A couple of weeks before that, I went to one at a place called Malden. But it's more, I mean, for me personally, I live on the Mornington Peninsula, and it's more the day out than the actual looking at all the car bits and pieces.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a nice cruise in the country and look around a bit. And
what sort of a car have you got?
Well, I'm actually driving a fairly new Commodore, but because I went to a car show a couple of weeks ago and I was interested by all these old cars, I've actually gone out and bought an old Jag so that I can sort of take part.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Well, I mean, the reason I picked the old Jag is I didn't want to invest sort of too much money in it. And like the old Jags, not the really old ones that are very expensive, but there's like a mid-range ones from the 86 to 94, and you can pick them up dirt cheap. But when they were brand new in the back then, they were like a $140,000 car, so they're quite a magnificent sort of vehicle.
Yeah.
And you can pick them up cheap and get involved.
Bit of work involved in them too, but I'd say.
Yeah, well, it's a sort of thing like if I was a young guy starting a new occupation, I wouldn't go out and buy an old Jag because you'd want a reliable car to get you to and from work every day.
Mm.
But having just retired and figured, well, if something goes wrong with it, I've got a bit of spare time to tinker with it and get it running again and whatever the case may be, so I can afford to do it because it's only like a second car.
What did you do, Pete, for a living?
I was 35 years with Vic Pol, Victorian Police.
Oh, I see. There you go.
So
I suppose...
So all this retirement's very new to me at the moment. Like I said, it's only been 6 weeks.
Well, you'll get used to it. People say to me, when I talk to them, they've said, I've just retired. They say, but look, since I've retired, I've got no time to do anything. Yeah. I'm so busy.
Yeah, it's been like that for me over the last 6 weeks. I've been spending a lot of time with the grandkids, running around to car shows, doing cleaning up the house and yard and things like that.
Well, the kids will always find plenty of work for you to do, Pete.
Yeah.
Listen, Pete, you've obviously seen the news of the attack in Sydney, and you're a policeman and you've been on the job for a lot of times. I don't know. There's nothing you can say really about that, but except it just amazes me that people are allowed to carry knives. Well, they're not allowed to carry knives around, but they do carry knives around all the time. And I don't know what you do about something like that. You've worked in the force for a long time. Have you got any thoughts?
Well, just looking at the sort of bloke he is and the sort of knife he had, I don't think any regulations about carrying knives would have applied to him. He's obviously come there with that big long knife for some purpose. I just, like I said, being in the police force, I just feel sorry for the policewoman that's had to shoot him.
Mm.
Because there's a lot she's got to go through now. It's not as simple as, like, you know, you shoot someone, you just go back to work the next day. There'll be constant inquiries. You know, she might be sort of stood down pending those inquiries. There's all sorts of stuff she has to go through. Coronial inquiries. It'll sort of hang over her for years and years to come.
And that's
it. Might even sort of prompt her to resign too. Who knows?
Yeah, it's and you. I suppose you've seen. Not the same, but similar things that happen during the life of a police person?
Yeah, well, it's the sort of job you never know what's going to happen. Mm. Sort of day in, day out, something could happen. So that's part of the job, I suppose.
It is.
You've got to be ready for it.
Yeah, it is really, yeah. Isn't it? And that's, I suppose...
But by all accounts, she's done a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know all the circumstances, but she was on her own. She's responded very quickly and taken the necessary action to sort of finish the situation.
Yeah, you get him... You know, you see some of those things that happen in America and the forces are late to arrive and it goes on for, you know, 20 or 30 minutes, for God's sake. Imagine if that had happened.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's the only thing. Like, at least he didn't have a gun. It was only a knife, even though he's created so much havoc.
Well, you can just imagine the scene, but blood everywhere and all that sort of stuff and just horribleness. Just unbelievable stuff. Well, Pete, you enjoy your swap meet. Where is it? Lansfield.
Lansfield, yeah. I haven't actually figured out where it is yet. I've got to type it in the little map thing. I'm just picking up a mate, and he's going to come too, and then we'll type in Lansfield and cruise up there.
And looking for parts for a Jaguar. What year is
I don't actually need any parts. It's an 87. I don't really need any parts. It's just
that's because you haven't looked at it. That's because you haven't looked at it properly.
A day out more than anything else.
All right. Good on you, Pete.
All right. See ya.
See you, mate. Bye. Annabelle, is it?
Hello. Yeah. Good morning, Ian. How are you?
Good, thanks, Annabelle.
That's good. Look, I'm ringing you. First of all, can I acknowledge that awful incident in Bondi last night and all the people who were killed and injured? But mostly I'm ringing you to tell you about the Vietnam Nurses Memorial that we're opening in Morven on April 24th.
Right. Tell us.
Okay, so there were about 350 Australian women who went to Vietnam during the war. Some of them army nurses, 43 of them army nurses, some of them RAAF nurses, and some of them civilian nurses who worked in the provincial hospitals in Vietnam with the civilian surgical teams. And there is acknowledgement of them in various individual ways in some of the... obvious places in Australia, one being the War Memorial very briefly in the Vietnam section and at the Vietnam National Vietnam Museum on Phillip Island and a couple of other places, but there's actually no, as far as I know, there's no dedicated memorial to them anywhere in Australia. So we're creating that and opening it, the first stage, on April 24th. And I just wanted everybody to know about it because it's time that all Australians knew what these women contributed.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And you've written a book, Annabelle Braley, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Mm. Actually, I came in with one of the nurses and spoke to you in 2016. And back then, like, really nobody knew about the nurses, outside, obviously, their own families and Vietnam veterans, etc. So I hope a little bit of awareness has been raised in the meantime, but I hope that this... it's such an important contribution that they made, and I think that we've been slow to acknowledge all nurses in many ways, but we're doing that quite well with the earlier wars. I think one of the big differences is that the nurses who've been to, the Great War, the Second World War, etc., while they may not necessarily have been well acknowledged until recently, they've always been revered. But the nurses that went to Vietnam actually weren't, not for the reasons that the Vietnam veterans weren't, but more just because they were, a bit undervalued, really, particularly the RAAF nurses and then the civilian nurses. The RAAF nurses were told when they came back that they actually hadn't really been in Vietnam because they were based in Butterworth and weren't acknowledged appropriately until 1993.
Now, Annabelle, tell me, what the name of your book is?
Our Vietnam Nurses.
Our Vietnam Nurses. And what does this memorial in Morven look, what's it going to look like?
The first stage is a permanent photographic memorial.
Mm.
So there are 16 photographs of nurses, all of different different sets of nurses, like some of the civilian nurses, some of the RAAF nurses and some of the army nurses,
mm-hmm.
At work in Vietnam. And what we're hoping to achieve, apart from the acknowledgement, is actually a bit of a storyline that gives people an idea of what it was like for them to be in Vietnam and the different kind of work that they did, the different level of contribution that they made, the circumstances under which they worked, the... just the outcome of what they did. They were just the most extraordinary stories, really.
Yeah.
And we decided we had the opportunity to create this memorial, and we've gone ahead and done it.
And
thanks to the Morven Historical Museum, who got on board with this very quickly.
Isn't that great? Now, and this takes place on the 24th. What time? That's a
on
Tuesday,
the
isn't it?
That's Wednesday, day before Anzac Day. And it's at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and purposely not on Anzac Day, but running into Anzac Day. And five of the nurses will actually be here, which is really exciting.
And you'd obviously like anyone who's involved or thinks they're related in some way to any of that thing to come along and say good day.
Well, we'd be very happy for people to come along, but more importantly, we'd be really happy for people to come and see the memorial, at any time, and certainly during their travels, because it will be a really special exhibition, I think, and it's a permanent one. And we think perhaps, it's a place for people to come and learn about the nurses.
Mm.
It's also perhaps a place for some of the Vietnam veterans who've, had reason to thank the nurses to actually come and, for them to come and see their story and remember them as well.
Exactly.
But I'd just like all Australians to know about them.
Good on you. And they'll have, vets will have memories too. They probably have heaps of stories to tell
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. And look, if anybody, if they'd like to get their pens out and write this down, mm-hmm. I'm contactable on... my email address is Bella Rose, BELLARose, 55@bigpond.com. I'd be very happy to be contacted by anybody who's interested in knowing more about it.
All right, Annabelle Braley, good on you. The 24th in Morven, about 4 o'clock. Good on you.
Thanks very much, Ian.
Good on you. Bye.
wherever I travel, often I bump into people who play golf. Never been interested in golf myself, but I know what it does to people. I had a friend who gave up work, and he was only in his 30s, because he wanted to play golf. And, you know, he'd get up at 4 or 5 and he was obsessed every day of the week. Every day of the week. And it can be, well, everything can be like that. People get obsessed by things. And I suppose golf is no exception. Come and meet these people. I'm talking to Peter.
Peter Way.
And Gwyn.
Guinevere.
Guinevere, is it?
It's Guinevere.
Guinevere. Mm. That's the old King Arthur.
That's the one. Yeah. That's the one.
And you're in Austinville. Where are you from?
Austinville, yeah, from Logan City in Queensland. We're down here for 3 nights and then we're moving up to Mullumbimby today for another 3 nights.
What for?
For more golf.
Well, tell me.
So we're playing 4 days.
So this is a golfing holiday?
Yes, more
but,
or less.
But what about for you? When
you have
you
a look
play?
At all the lovely towns and the four of us coffee shops. But we look in all the shops and the local little towns are lovely. So we enjoy going around and seeing things.
You don't play golf?
Oh, I can, but badly.
So we do this a couple of times a year is the plan. So we had one last year, which I'm now defending champion from that. So
made a little trophy of an old pewter cup they got in St Vinny's and on a fire log and set it all up on a beautiful plaque with all the little things on it so their names can go on it.
So golf takes you around the place, does it?
Yeah, well, that's we normally play up at Mount Warren Park. We regularly play a couple of times a week in the vets up there near Beenleigh. It's all good fun.
You've retired now, obviously.
Yeah,
you've got time to waste time playing golf.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely a waste of time for me.
What did you do?
I was a civil engineer and worked for many years with Logan City Council. I was director of city works there.
We need lots of engineers, apparently.
Oh, yeah, sure do. Yeah, I wish we're trying to encourage some of our grandkids to do engineering, but
they good at maths?
Yeah, one is. Yeah, so we've got one that we're hopeful will go down that path. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people are trying to do that. Kids don't want to seem to do maths for some reason.
Yeah, which is a shame. Yeah, I think they need to be encouraged more, obviously, at primary school. And I think solving a maths problem can be very satisfying, so they should get more encouragement for that.
Yeah, well, it's the thing, isn't it? For someone who can't do maths really very well at all, but I can understand that. Mathematics is the basis of the whole joint, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've had a great career in engineering, you know, some bridge design and stuff like that, which has been very satisfying. But
not as satisfying as golf, obviously.
Exactly, yeah, that's right.
There is good time for it now.
Yeah. I can recommend retirement, that's for sure.
How's things in Logan? Going ahead, Logan? Lots of building?
Oh, yeah. It's certainly growing. And, of course, you know, with amalgamation a decade ago, they're much, much bigger than when I was there. Population-wise, I think they're aiming for about 500,000 in the next decade or so. We enjoy it. They're a good place to live.
And where we are, we're in Cornubi with lots of bush and trees, and that's what we've come from that, so that's what we like.
And wandering around golf courses.
Yeah, that's the part-time job.
All right. Well, Peter and Gwyn, lovely to talk to you.
To meet you too.
Thanks, Macca. All the best.
Peter and Gwyn have a way, and they were walking around the golf course. A waste of good gardening time, one of my friends used to say about golf. 1300 700 222. I've been talking to John Atchison about the places and the cities and the towns and the mountains and the streams around Australia. But don't forget, along the coastline, we have a beautiful coastline, which I found when I sailed from Weipa right round the top through the Torres Strait and back down the other side, the east coast of Australia. Was just mind-boggling. Come and meet John Atchison.
But also, I love the oceans around Australia. I think that, you know, I think we tend to forget about that other frontier, the ocean frontier. The waterways around Australia, I think, are wonderful.
And the names, the Buccaneer Archipelago and Roaring Beach and
Napoleon Bonaparte Gulf, you know, with three rivers flowing into it. I love that one. And the one I was talking about in the Otway Station Beach between Point Flinders and Moonlight Head, you know, as Ray Erickson says, that has to be one of the wildest and most unpredictable beaches anywhere around this coastline, I think.
And there's great controversy there now because they want to put a whole lot of wind towers up there.
There's a big 91-kilometre walkway being developed by the people at Apollo Bay and the Otways tourist people. We did a section of it recently. It's a magnificent walk.
And you probably don't want to look at wind towers as you walk on there.
I don't want to look at wind towers there, but on the other hand, you've got to have energy. I think one of the most memorable experiences I had when I was doing field work was I was up on the Comboyne Plateau about 3 PM on a very hot, dry afternoon. I'd been trying to work out an early line of survey of Henry Danger's down the Barnard River across towards Port Macquarie and couldn't work out for the life of me where he'd been. And I came across this old guy on horseback. He must have been a man in his 70s. And he wondered what on earth I was doing up there. So I stopped and we sat down on the log and talked for about an hour. And he was a horseman who'd ridden all over the eastern escarpment and he knew the thing like the back of his hand. And he told me that one of the roughest rivers he'd ever ridden in Australia was the Pignabani River, which is up between the Hunter side of the system and the Mount Royal Range and the Barrington Tops and the Gloucester-Barrington systems.
What's the name of the river?
The Pignabani, P-I-G-N-A-B-A-R-N-E-Y.
Where does that name come from?
I have no idea, but do you know that in 1832, shepherds of the and drovers of the Australian Agricultural Company took 6,000 ewes from Gloucester Stroud area across to the Liverpool Plains through that catchment and lost only 6 sheep on the drive.
And through across the Pignabani?
Pignabani River.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, that's a great name too, you know. But there are names like that all over this landscape.
What did this bloke look like?
Oh, he's tall and wiry, a typical outback bushman that Russell Ward would have loved to have had in the Australian legend. Yeah. That type of guy, yeah.
Probably no longer exists now, maybe.
I suspect he's probably the equivalent of in a helicopter or a little three-wheeled cycle. Yeah. Mm.
It's all interesting, isn't it? That was John Acheson and a series of talks I did with him a little while ago.
G'day, Macca. It's Michael Smith in Cooktown.
Oh, Michael Smith, who's flying around Australia in his seaplane. Is that what I call it, seaplane?
That'll do.
And where are you? You're in Cooktown.
Yeah, just got into Cooktown last night, and I'm actually here for two days or three nights.
And how's it been? How's your flight been? And you're doing this in 44 days, is that right?
Yeah, so for those who weren't listening last week, 44 days retracing the original flying route around Australia. It was done by the Royal Australian Air Force in a seaplane because there weren't enough runways to land on. So I'm landing in all of the same places they did on the same dates. And so came into Cooktown late yesterday, came up from Townsville. And the trip's been fantastic. When I spoke to you last Sunday, I was only one day in and already behind because of the weather coming out of Melbourne, which I'm sure around the country everyone's just rolling their eyes saying, of course you got delayed in Melbourne with weather, but as everyone says to me in Queensland. I picked it up pretty quickly on that first Sunday. I managed to get up to Rose Bay and land on the water. And then rather than stay in Sydney the night, I kept going up to the Myall Lakes. The flight originally landed on the Myall River. Because of really, really bad weather. But I landed on the lake right next to the river and literally tied up to the shore. Just ran a rope from the back of the plane to a tree and rolled out my swag and slept in the plane. It was awesome.
Now, tell me the sort of plane that you're flying is a...
So it's called a Sea Bear. It's a twin-engine flying boat. So it's a bit like a Catalina where the hull of the plane lands on the water. Mm. So think that, but in a smaller scale. And it's a six-seater, but I've removed the two back seats. So I've got – it's a bit like a flying station wagon. The back of the plane actually opens up and, you know, I've got a bed in the back and plenty of space for things. So, so one of the joys is you can land on the water, literally pull up to the shore and sleep in the back.
And the names of the blokes who did, I assume they were blokes, were they, in the RAAF? Yeah.
Their officers are Goebel and McIntyre.
And what sort of plane were they flying?
So it was called a Fairey Mark III. At the end of World War I, the British government donated a lot of aeroplanes to Australia and Canada and other countries that had helped them in the war. And they were part of that package. And we put that plane on floats. And so we had a few of them on floats, and it was a big single-engine aircraft, quite a bit bigger than my plane, but with a big single engine. And the engine actually proved to be reasonably reliable until I got all the way around to WA where it broke down. Anyway, they had a pretty good run with that plane, but, you know, we are talking about a plane from 100 years ago. So where they, you know, the sort of things they had to do on engines back then was, you know, every week they'd have to kind of take the head off and just grind the valves and make sure it was all running sweetly. So it was pretty tough time. And their navigation was, you know, they had a compass and a watch and the airspeed indicator. So uh-huh. It's pretty fundamental. But the navigation on this trip is so easy because as long as the beach is out the left window, you go in the right way.
Exactly. So mostly you're going to land on water if you can, but you can land on land, can't you?
Yeah, I am. And look, what I'm doing is, so for instance, last night when they came, they landed on the river in Cooktown. So I flew down. I did a splash on the water. We call it a splash and go because I don't come to a full stop, just sort of skim along the water and then take off again. And then I went to the runway. It's just not, to be frank, it's not really safe to leave the plane sitting on the edge of the water for a couple of days. So I go to the airport. And but I have to tell you, you know, coming up the coast, I stopped at Southport and Gladstone, which were, you know, great stops. I did a talk in Southport for the local flying club and they were just amazing and really hospitable. But when I got to Townsville, which is a RAF base, I actually was escorted in by two EA-18 Growlers, which most people would think of as a Hornet. They're the electronic warfare version. So they came up right next to me and guided me into the airport because this was so, like, this is one of the great, this will go down as one of the greatest days of my life to have, to be intercepted by the RAF in a friendly way. Because they have set off from Amberley and they are also celebrating this centenary milestone by flying a pair of those planes around the country in a week.
Oh, wow. Yeah, what are they called? EA things. Growlers?
Yeah, the EA-18 Growler, most people would think of them as an FA-18 Hornet, and then there's the Super Hornets, and the Growlers are a slightly different configuration and they're more about electronic warfare rather than...
And why do they call them growlers? Do they make a growling noise or what?
Oh, look, I was trying to work that out, actually, because, you know, you have a lot of thinking time when you're flying up the coast. I was thinking, well, if a hornet's about attacking, I suppose a growling is like it's about standing back and, you know, you roar at people. So if if a lion's roaring and that's intimidating, or maybe electronic warfare is intimidating too. Yeah. Anyway, that was very, very cool to be, and they let me park at the RAF base and even just to see my plane lined up with, you know, those made me feel pretty humbled, to be honest. So that was a great couple of days. And, you know, so far this East Coast has been nice. I mean, every place I've been, there's been old friends I've been able to catch up with and things. So it's a really nice trip.
And what in Cooktown's, I want to go to Cooktown and do a program there actually sometime. We haven't never been to Cooktown. So,
Well, it's my first time too, Macca. And straight away, I thought, what a charming little town. Like there's, you know, all of these towns out there that not many people get to, but I'm staying straight away. I knew I wanted to stay at the old pub. So the Cooktown Hotel sits here on top of the hill. It's the classic old Queenslander hotel, you know, where like when you're up on the balcony, you've got the exposed framework of the walls and like it's really basic, but I mean, I love these old pubs. It's so Australiana and, yeah, I reckon you'd like it here.
I reckon I would too. I've got in my studio, a bloke from Cooktown actually sent me this. It's like a, you know, one of those things, hanging things you hang with all sorts of bits and pieces on it. Usually got butterflies. This bloke sent me this from Cooktown. He says 100% Cooktown, all local driftwood and shells and seeds and coral and pumice stone and bamboo and even a snail and a gum nut, all from Cooktown. It's like a... I don't know if you can hear it there. It's sort of it's off the beach and the river and everything in Cooktown, and it's like one of those what do you call those? A mobile, you know, and you just it's a good mobile, one that doesn't do you know what I mean?
Doesn't make annoying noises. Yeah. We did hear it, and it was very soothing, Ian.
All right, Michael, good on you, mate. Good luck and keep in touch, mate.
We'll check in next week.
Yeah, yep. Do a recce in Cooktown for us for a park to do our program in, okay?
Oh, done. I'll come back to you on that. In fact, there's a great one down by the shore behind the RSL. Already worked it out. I'll come back to you on that one.
Good luck. Safe travels, Michael. Good on you. Where are you, Carl? In Bowen.
I'm in Bowen, Macca. How are you?
Good, mate.
I haven't caught up for ages.
No.
I put a bit of ring and say g'day and tell you about our upcoming rocket launch. They've got a rocket launch pad built just north of the town, and they're waiting for permission from the authorities to launch the first rocket.
Yeah, go on. No, I was just saying, my producer, did you know they're launching rockets in Bowen?
No.
I didn't know that. No.
So it's on the, apparently, as long as you get permission, I've just seen on Facebook yesterday that 4th of May,
It's not
Elon. Clown launching rocket.
It's not Elon Musk's rocket, is it?
No. It's a private Australian firm.
Wow.
And it's the first Australian one to be launched, so it's pretty exciting. And they picked us for a spot because of our latitude and longitude and everything else.
And your vegetables.
And it's what good veggies we can pack with the astronauts. They've got lunch when they get up there.
So there's nobody on board this rocket, is there? No.
Well, unless they chuck me on without my consent, it's a possibility.
Yeah, that's a possibility, and probably a good one. Carl, you can't see. That's very dangerous. Once you put people in rockets, that can be dangerous. So, well, that's good news. And when's this happening in May?
It meant to be the 4th of May. That's what it said on the site yesterday, 4th of May. So, I don't know, it's probably too soon, but you should be up here on the 5th and you can talk about the rocket launch.
Yeah, well, we could be there on the 4th as well. And we could.
Yes, I mean, be on the 4th, but and then do a live broadcast on the 5th and talk about what you're seeing. I reckon it'd be great.
What, are they launching a satellite with it or what?
I'm not 100%. I know they're going to launch satellites. I know that this first one's just a trial, or whether it's actually going to launch something. I'm not really up on the information, to be honest. I've just been like everyone else hearing that's happening, but never thought it would, because I've been talking about it for 2 years. But they just opened it the other day. The treasurer was here, and the local member was here, and they opened it, and they've got the rocket sitting on the pad, and it's rearing to go as soon as they get the last ticks from the government. So
how big's the rocket?
It's a fairly decent sized rocket. It's not a baby.
Mm. Oh well. Okay.
So it'd be quite impressive. So actually, our CEO from the growers, Roy Collins, has just become the mayor of the Whitsundays. So I'm sure if I gave him a call, he'd send an invitation. We'll have Australia over talking about the rocket launch from Bowen. I think that'd be marvellous.
Well, I think it would be too. But look, we don't need an invitation. We just turn up anyway.
You sound like me.
All right. Look, thanks for telling us that. The 4th of May, you reckon?
Well, that's what's on the site yesterday, that as long as they get all the ticks, it's going to be the 4th of May. So I reckon they'd be pretty impressive to see. It's a once-in-a-lifetime to see the very first one go up.
Yeah, well, I meant to come to Bowen. I've got to go to Cairns, and I want to go to Cooktown, and I want to go to Darwin. I'm going to go back to Perth, and I want to go everywhere. I've got to go to Geelong.
Yeah, you're like me.
Yeah, but anyway,
you'll put it in your diary. Fourth of May, and hopefully we can see you here and look after you, and you do a live broadcast. And
all right,
and
I've got to go
show
to,
you around.
I've got to go to that cake shop. Is that cake shop still open?
Jockheim's Cakes are still open. Yeah,
right,
they are.
All right, okay. All right, Carl, good on you, mate.
You enjoy your day.
See you, mate. Thank
good
you.
Bye.
And it's Andy. Good morning, Andy. Where are you?
Yeah, mate. Manners Creek Cattle Station on the Northern Territory Queensland border. We're on the Plenty Highway. If you're a grey nomad, you'd know this highway pretty well because you go from Alice Springs to Mount Isa. It's the main road joining those two cities. But has been closed most of the year because we've had four cyclones in the Gulf this year in the Gulf of Carpentaria. Even though we're probably 1,000 kilometres from the action, all those tropical lows end up coming down through Camel Wheel, flooding the Georgina River. That's been over 3 metres at the Urundanji crossing. The Georgina River flows straight past our eastern boundary. And we've been stuck here. We can't get to Mount Isa for the last month or two. In fact, our manager's doing a station stores run in his aeroplane this morning.
I was just going to say that. Can you fly in there? I'd love to fly in and have a look at that water around the place. I remember flying over, I forget when it was, where there was a big flood, and I flew over with Dick Smith in a plane, and there was just water as far as the eye could see. It was unbelievable, and I assume you've got views like that up there.
Lots of water. Well, I think one of your correspondents said this morning how the Georgina ends up flowing into the Diamantina, into the Warburton, and that is roaring into Lake Eyre right now. If Lake Eyre's not full now, it will be very, very soon, probably to the point of overflowing, which only happens about, I think, once every 100 years. But it's been a fantastic season. The Georgina River, we have to cross that at Urundanji to get to Mount Isa to do our stores runs. That's been closed for over a month. We can't even get through Boolia or Baduri. So we've got a plane heading up. We've got two planes on the property. Most of the stations in Central Australia, or especially on the NT Queensland border, have their own helicopters, own planes, because we are stuck here. for months at a time. And as I said, four cyclones in the Gulf, all the tropical lows have headed down south and end up either flooding the Todd River in Alice Springs or the Georgina River, the Diamantina, have all been pumping this year. It's been absolutely fantastic down here. And that much grass for the cows. Very fat cows this year, mate. It'll be look out for all the meat on the meat trays in the supermarkets coming up in the next few months. Fantastic meat coming up from these cattle stations in Central Australia.
Andy, it's a bit of a far cry for you from Kakadu, isn't it? And they've had a bit of a wet season too, haven't they?
Yeah, well, as you know, I lived in Kakadu 40 years. I'm actually heading back there fairly soon. It's been a fantastic wet season. My mob is still up there in Kakadu on the outstation. And I know the East Alligator River's been absolutely roaring. That's still closed. Normally, we're driving through from Jabiru to Gumbalanya this time of year. Not quite yet. I think the Majilla Creek might be down a bit, but it's been a great, fantastic season right across the top end. If not, you know, at least above or very much above average rainfall right through the top end, tip of Cape York, Darwin, Kakadu, Arnhem Land's been fantastic.
Oh, Andy, it's a great report, great weather report, mate. And isn't it interesting? And it was looking like nothing much was going to happen for a wet season. And then all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom.
Too right, mate. And excuse me, yeah, I better feed the chook soon, Maggot. But I tell you what, it's 7 degrees this morning. So it's been a pretty warm, even though we're not in the tropics, we're sort of halfway between Alice Springs and Mount Isa. And it has been very hot in the last few months, but it's just in the last week, down to 6, 7, 8 degrees. It's been fantastic. And today, heading for high, I think here, probably about 30, 35 degrees. Beautiful day in Central Australia.
Jim, Andy, thanks for your call, mate. Good on you.
Thanks, Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Mike from Hillary's Boat Harbour in Perth, Western Australia, mate. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Tell me about Hillary's Boat Harbour.
Well, mate, I'm standing here. The water is like a mirror, and looking out towards Rocknest Island from the groin here, mate. I'm going to take a walk over with my my big black labby that's 12 years old to the lighthouse, and yeah, we've got the reflection of the sun across the water, mate, and life's great. And I'm looking at a boat here that's 100 odd years old. She's one of the original, from what I understand, one of the original Sydney to Hobart boats. Boat called Isabella, a wooden boat, mate. Yeah, it's a lovely spot. And we, you know, we live in the West, mate. We live in, you know, the best part of Australia.
Oh, I love it. We were there last year, and we haven't been there for a long time, and I just fell in love all over again. I love Perth. What do you do, Michael, for a living?
Oh, mate, I was lucky enough to be able to retire at 50, mate.
At 50?
Yeah, I do a lot of nothing.
You're a financial planner, right? A financial advisor.
No, mate, no. I left school at 13 years of age, mate, and worked bloody hard.
Well, there you go. Good on you.
Yeah.
So you're just out walking your Labrador this morning?
Just walking my Labradors, mate, and we'll go and have some breakfast. The labbies will get a bit of bacon, which they'll sit there and wait for that. So,
all right.
Like I said, mate, it's all good. It's all good.
All right, good on you, Michael.
Okay, good on you, Macca. Have a good day, mate. Thank you.
Bye. Yeah.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.